Hey, are we on?
All right, welcome. We're on. We're on. We're recording.
That's our
That's
intro.
A great intro.
Hey, hey, are we on?
Hey, I just say, are we doing it? What the fuck? I don't know, man. Oh, shit.
Yeah, see, you're sounding really weird, man. You're sounding like there's some, what do they call it when the audio pixelates? You know what I mean? That's the only way I can think of how you would say it.
It's digitizing?
Yeah, it's digitizing your voice.
Weird.
Yeah, it's like when you kind of
auto-tune turned off.
Like, get a little excited. Say some stuff loudly and
loud.
No, that didn't. That was fine. Okay, so this is like our dry run of spoiler country, right? And
going in dry.
We're going in dry, and that's John Horsley over there, and I'm Kenrick Regan, and we're gonna try to make this happen, trying to make it work.
Although it's not really true going in dry. We've been chatting, trying to figure this out for like an hour, so it's not really going in dry. We've been practicing.
Yeah, we have been practicing, and there was a concept of just reading our Facebook chat there for a second.
We could still do that at some point, to pull it up and just read it back and forth.
God, there's some episodes. There's some nuggets in there.
Some turd nuggets.
Yeah, some turd nuggets. Maybe when we get to a point where we just don't have nothing to talk about, like, hey, let's just pull up Facebook every once in a while and say, okay, what do we...
Let's be real, though. Is there going to be a time where we week that don't have something to talk about?
Oh, probably not. Probably not.
Right, exactly.
Probably not.
Hold on. Let me say that again. Is there going to be a time where something we're not talking about?
Oh, God. And so it begins. No.
I should not have those buttons.
So just to clarify things, we're both nerds on comic books. We both like movies, specifically sci-fi, fantasy, all things geeky, I guess you could say.
Romantic comedies.
Yeah. Romantic comedies. Love me some Serendipity. I'm just saying. And then, so this
Made in Manhattan.
This podcast is going to be, I think at the beginning, it's going to be very ununique. to flatten it out. But no, seriously, I think it's going to be really how we're trying to build something here and how to gain an audience, right? Because I'd like it to the point where we can just talk about what we want to talk about, like getting guests on and like an astrophysicist from the UW and talk about the beginning and the meaning of life, you know, from a different perspective than what you and I would typically think about.
Right.
Beyond if Superman and Batman can actually beat each other up or not, you know.
Superman wins, but it's easy though.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, no, he doesn't win because he'll never go all the way, and Batman would. So
he went all the way with Lois and Wonder Woman.
Wah, wah, wah.
and Lord of the Mar the Mermaid. I mean, he's been around.
You digitized again, man. That's weird. Have I digitized at all since we've been talking?
Not at all, no. Not once.
I wonder if it's your preamp.
It might be the mix. So I have two mixers. I have a 4-channel. Sorry, I have a 2-channel and a 4-channel, right? Or technically a 4-channel and an 8-channel, but two active channels, four active channels.
Why'd you say it like that? Technically a 4-channel.
Because only a douchebag would clarify that, so I was clarifying as a douchebag.
I thought somebody gave you shit, so you had it, but like started as a douchebaggery going quickly.
No, so the 2-channel preamp one I have is an older one. I have a newer 4-channel one, but I usually pull out the 2-channel one for just stuff that's one-on-one like this because it's smaller.
All right.
And I have had some issues with that one doing some weird shit. So it might be that preamp. So for like the actual stuff, I might have to pull out the big one.
Oh.
If I don't want to digitize.
Right. I'm just using the sound card, obviously, on my laptop. I think eventually if we get going and we get sponsors and we have things going on, then we upgrade our game, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
And then we get an actual little studio. That would be the goal.
Yeah, at my house. At my house, yeah.
Why at your house? That's so far away. Middle,
so
dude.
I don't have to
middle
travel.
Ground. No,
so
middle ground.
So
no.
I don't have to travel.
No. Because if we're going to do that, I can build a shed in my backyard, and that could be the studio. And then I don't have to travel.
Ah, damn it. Don't make sense now.
So what do you think of this Marvel Legacy?
I have mixed feelings about it.
Well, why don't you explain what Marvel Legacy is? Because, I mean, I started reading the article, and to be honest, I just read renumbering, and I was like, I'm done. I'm out.
So I'll explain as much as I know about it, which I think is as much anybody knows about it, because Marvel hasn't released a bunch of information on it. basically Legacy is them going back to old numbering of all their comics. So like Captain America will go back to like 6 whatever, Spider-Man will go back to 700 and something like that. But also series like Venom just had issue 150, which I guess they tallied it up and it was the 150th Venom comic or something like that. But Venom never had an ongoing series, so they're just counting all the miniseries, I guess.
Well, doesn't that take it away from them being miniseries?
Exactly, yeah. So they also have like Deadpool, whatever. I mean, they're going out and making it. I think they're trying to get like cash in on Legacy and stuff, because Legacy and Nostalgia for upping all their numbers, because they're also all the first covers are just homage covers to classic issues. Like the first issue of Cable and whatever is an homage to New Mutants 87, which is the first appearance of Cable. So they're all, I mean, I like homage covers here and there, but like there's 53 of them coming out with 53 various homage covers.
I like homage covers for like the variant of this month's Punisher with Mary Jane Watson dressed up as the Punisher and Mephisto is in the sights, like the Spider-Man cover.
Right. Spider-Man 121.
Is it 121 or 120? I don't know. It's 120 something.
It's 121.
Okay, it's 121. So I like it like that. But when they just redo covers with the same characters, and it's just, I don't know, I just think it's lazy.
Well, like, how many times have they redone Spider-Man 300 cover on various issues? Like, that's been reprinted as variants, like, hundreds of times now. It's ridiculous.
It's lazy. It's total lazy. And it's like, it is. You know, and I don't like it. I like to see them go back to their original numbering system. I think counting up the Venom stuff is stupid, but whatever, you know.
Yeah, but fucking stick it with it.
Yeah, but stay stick with it. But you know what they're doing? To me, when I started reading this, I was thinking, you know, if you don't know, it's they keep restarting series, starting with a new number one, which makes it confusing.
Every 2 years. Every two years,
all of a sudden, your comic book restarts at number one. And so, I think the thought process is that someone who is just getting into collecting comic books or reading comic books, sometimes when they see a number like 67 or something like that, then they're like, well, I'm not going to go back and read all those back issues, right? And I don't know where they're at in the storyline. So if we start over, then that'll attract more readers. But the problem is when you do this, I believe you alienate your heart, your core fans that have been there for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years.
You do. And also, it's a marketing ploy. They'll even admit it. It's a marketing scheme. Because
I know it is.
Issue one will sell more. And the problem is that Marvel fucking does this, and they do it in the middle of a storyline to where they'll have a storyline going on issue 12, cancel
something
that series.
Something that's finally that too. They have a decent writer. I mean, they killed Mockingbird.
I don't mean
they killed her. I just mean they killed that series because I don't even know why. Because of feminism? I don't even know.
Right.
It was ridiculous. Well, it was actually interesting to read that series.
And the writer of that series, Colleen something, I can't remember his name, is up for an Eisner Award for that series.
Yeah. And then you kill it because, what, it's not selling enough? It used to be you'd stick with the book for a while before you just gave up on it.
It used to be they'd give you 12 issues. They'd run a series for 12 issues, and if you couldn't pick up a thing by 12 issues, that's why they gave you an arc. You'd make an arc in 12 issues. That way, nothing was left at the end.
Right. That would make
anymore,
sense.
It's, I don't know. And
I think people like you and I are getting so upset with these renumberings. And DC is not immune to this either. They're doing it, too. You mean they're resetting a lot of stuff and doing, like, the new 52, and then
they're not immune, but they're not as bad.
Right, but they're still doing
like,
it.
I can count the number of renumberings DC has had in the last 35 years on 3 fingers. On Marvel, that's 2 years.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
DC had a renumbering. I guess if you go back 60 years, you can do it 4 times. DC had a renumbering in the 60s when they launched the Silver Age with, like, Green Lantern number one. They had a renumbering in 87 when John Byrne redid Superman.
Passion. I got passion.
In 87, they relaunched after Crisis on Infinite Earths. Then you had a renumbering at New 52 in 2011. Then you had a renumbering at Rebirth. So since 1987, there's been 3 renumberings of DC. Now, they've relaunched series with new characters, like Green Lantern has multiple series and shit. But
the New 52 and Rebirth, right?
Yeah. Those were recent. That was 2011 and then 2016. So that's 5 years apart compared to Marvel doing 2011, 2013, 2015, now 2017.
Do you think they're bringing back the legacy numbers just to appease people like you and I? That they feel that they might be alienating and moving away from from buying those.
So, in my opinion, Marvel made a big, huge fuck up with the making Captain America a Nazi, a Hydra agent.
Well, the worst is they came out and said he's not a clone, and then like a month later, he's a clone.
Well, they couldn't. It's a huge slap in the face I know people will say, well, it's a story. Just read the story. It's not real. Yeah, I understand it's a story, but you're taking an iconic character created by two Jewish guys during World War II to be an anti-Nazi character and making him what he fights against, and then basically saying, fuck you to everybody else in the world who thinks it's wrong.
Right.
You go through a storyline that everybody fucking hates, which is tanking their sales. Nobody likes the storyline.
I'm sure Kirby would be just throwing up.
He'd be pissed.
He'd be throwing up, yeah. Yeah. I mean, because he was literally in World War II fighting Germans.
Captain America's first appearance, he was punching Adolf Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah. Great cover, too.
Yeah. Joe Simon, the creator, the writer, and Jack Kirby would both be like, what the fuck are you doing, Marvel? Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. 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 That's just nuts. It's nuts to me. I saw that. I got that issue only because I knew it was going to happen. Because, you know, spoilers. Because this is spoiler country. But we started watching it. I mean, I started reading it, and I saw it, and I knew it was coming. Then when they hit it, I was like, "You just kind of ruined this." I mean, I've never been a Captain America fan. I'm not a big Boy Scout fan. I like Superman movies. Not a huge fan of the comic books. I know you love Superman comic books, but I'm never been a huge fan. I like Punisher, right? I mean, I like Wolverine. Those are the ones that I liked. I like Lobo. Right. I used to love reading Lobo because he was so unpredictable. You know what I mean? He was Deadpool, right?
Well, Lobo is a parody of Wolverine.
Right. Right.
Straight up. Lobo was created as a parody of the anti-heroes like Wolverine and Punisher.
Just because Wolverine was all over the place in the 80s. You couldn't get away from him.
Right.
If you collected comics in the 80s, he was like on every cover, every story arc. He was everywhere.
In the 90s and now.
Yeah.
Deadpool.
Right.
Now it's Deadpool everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I'll think about Marvel Legacy, too. They're calling it Marvel Legacy, but they're only legacying the characters that they own the movie rights for. Like,
Well, they're doing Spider-Man, right?
X-Men.
They're doing Amazing Spider-Man.
Well, they share Spider-Man now with Sony. But, like, and they're doing Fantastic Three, I guess, without, I don't know. There's something in Fantastic Four that doesn't include Reed Richards. And
why are they not including Reed Richards? Because it's stupid to have somebody be able to stretch all over the place?
I don't know. But and then they're doing, like, they do X-Men books, but they make sure that their X-Men stories don't really revolve around the X-Men characters that Fox uses in their movies. And
really? See, all those classic Chris Claremont stories just out the window.
I guess.
I mean, the X-Men of the 70s and early 80s, those storylines are amazing. The
'90s are not amazing.
No, all the 90s books suck. I mean, you read them, dude. There's just splash page after splash page. There's no context. There's no real good backstory. All the girls have ginormous boobs and just
tiny waist.
And it's just like all unrealistic art. Yeah, there's some cool things that came out of it, some cool people that came out of it.
Well, think about it, too. The 90s, with the 90s jump of Image Comics and stuff, and that whole everything has to be a splash page, everything has to be this beautiful art, and the story got pushed aside. That gave way for comics like Swamp Thing and Sandman and the Vertigo stuff to come up and be like, oh, here's you don't like this shit? Well, here's Preacher, you know, here's Why the Last Man.
Right.
Here's some good fucking writing with good art.
Oh, you know, I was listening to a podcast, and I want to say it was Mark Bernardin and Kevin Smith, that the two fat men on Batman.
Yeah.
And they were talking about Why the Last Man, and I didn't know this, that Brian K. Vaughan owns all the rights to Why the Last Man. And made a killing because it was just, you know, redistributed amongst all these different countries, and he's just making buku bucks off of it. And now it's getting developed into a TV show.
Yep. A lot of those Vertigo series, like Sandman and stuff, the rights on those characters are different than the rights in, like, a Batman book, because a lot of those were creator owned. I mean, Sandman by itself was, they asked Neil Gaiman to make a Sandman story, and he said, well, what if I do it differently? And he totally changed the Sandman character.
They were going to bring back everything. Sandman of the 70s.
Right.
Or before, whenever. You know which one I'm talking about. Sandman, the original DC Sandman.
The 40s. The 40s. Yeah. But again, Matt Wagner brought that back in Sandman Mystery Theater, and it was really good, and it was what kind of DC wanted, but then DC got this gem out of Gaiman with the Sandman series, which was still
unbelievable.
One of the best start-to-finish comic series. It's, you know, a long series.
Yeah.
I think it ever came out. I mean, it's 75 issues long, and it's good from beginning to end.
That first story arc, man, the art in that thing was ridiculous. and the storyline, and you're just reading it through. I couldn't stop. I went to the comic book store because I did not get that. First time I knew who Sandman was. I knew that everybody was going nuts when he introduced Death, and then all of a sudden you saw Death all over the place as a girl, right? And she had the Ankh life, and I remember seeing girls and guys wearing that Ankh everywhere, you know what I mean, and around the circles and stuff. But I never read it. So this is what, 1987, so I was 13, 14. Was it 87, 88, somewhere around there?
89, I think it launched.
Yeah, so late 80s, 89.
Yeah.
So I was 15. So I was still into Spider-Man, still into Punisher. You know what I mean? I was really into the mainstream. I started collecting Marvel. I didn't do a lot of DC like you did. I kind of wish I did because obviously the storylines and the writing was much, much better, I think. But it was hard because I really liked Spider-Man. So it's once you like a character, it's hard to move away from that universe into something different.
Luckily, the 90s Spider-Man was such shit. It was easy.
I stopped, right? Once I graduated high school, I basically stopped. And then, you know, I had, like, all these comic books. Anyways, I'd never read The Sandman. And then it was only last year that I read that first story arc. That was the first time. And I walked I walked into Mill Geek Comics. Shout out to Russ. And he comes in. He goes, "Have you ever read The Sandman series?" And he knows the kind of books that I like. I said, "You know, I never did." He goes, "You got to just take this home." And he gave me that first trade paperback. He said, "Just take this home and read it. If you like it, come back and you can purchase the book or just bring the book back. Don't worry about it." I was like, great. Went home. I read that thing that night. I couldn't put it down until I was done.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the art just blew the first two pages blew me away. The writing from Neil Gaiman was just spot on. And it was just like everything was like boom, boom, boom. And then you're just like, oh, I can't get enough of this. And now I'm going to go get the other. I'm just going to get the trade paperbacks. I mean, I'd like to go back and get the issues, the single issues, but at some point I got to pull myself back on what I spend on comic books. I need to go through my collection now and get rid of a lot of stuff.
I just did that. I just dumped off roughly 60 short boxes of comics in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, that's good. How'd you sell them?
Off Facebook. I just put a notice on a Facebook group page I'm on and had somebody come over and they paid me money for them. I mean,
well, let's go through mine and see if we can get rid of. I mean, most of mine are newer stuff. I don't, you know what I mean. I don't have a lot of back, because just for clarification, you know, I stopped collecting around 93, 92, about the time that New Mutants ended and, you know, all the, you know, once the X-Men, Astonishing X-Men came out, I think it was called, right? And it was Jim Lee, right? And they that's still the best selling book of all time, right?
Oh, that was just called X-Men.
X-Men, number one, and it was just so inundated. And I remember.
So I have quarrels with that. Yes, it's the best selling book of all time, but those numbers are very inflated.
It's the most purchased books from comic book stores.
Right.
That doesn't mean that they all sold out.
It was over ordered. It's like saying Spawn number one's a rare book. No, it's not.
Right. Right. They are going up in value, but I mean, it wasn't the amount that they sold. It was just. I felt like there was a time in comic books that was passing me. You know what I mean? That I was collecting these certain titles and everything was changing. And it was, you know, maybe I was growing up a little bit and not growing up in a sense, because I never stopped loving comic books. That'll never happen. I'll die and still love this. I love the smell of a comic book. I love getting a comic book from the 70s, opening it up and smell in the 70s, even though it's probably mildew, but I still think it's the nostalgia of it or whatever. So anyways, I stopped collecting probably about when I got out of high school, probably around, when did Spawn number one come out? 94, 95?
92, 93, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
93, I think.
Like,
I don't know.
Like 1 through 5 of Spawn were like the last comic books I bought in the 90s. And then I had all these long boxes, you know what I mean? Through collecting from like 1982 to 1992, 1993 or whatever. And had all these long boxes. So every time I moved, I'd carry all these long boxes and I was just getting sick of it. So I started working at a rather large software company here in the Northwest. And they had a cool thing that they used to do called the, it was basically called the news. And you could put in stuff to sell, right? But it was neat because they would literally print it out. It wasn't on the computer. You can go on the computer and go to a website and see it internally, but they would also print it out. And I thought that was neat because you could actually have it and go through it, and then you can get a hold of these people. And then they stopped doing that around 2003. But anyways, I put it in their thing, and this guy came in, and he bought my whole collection for around $5,000.
Nice.
I mean, I spent a lot more money than that on those things, but it was worth it at the time, and you know what I mean? And now that I look back, there's probably like 20 books that were today would be worth easily $5,000. But, you know, what are you going to do, right? You can't cry over spilt milk.
You can't look back, man. That's how you get. That's
exactly right. I was happy at the time. I got a lot of enjoyment out of it because I read everything I buy, you know?
Right.
Unless it's already in a case for whatever reason. But other than that, I read everything I buy because that's the point of comic books.
That's why you buy comics, to read them, yeah.
Yeah. So 24. So fast forward, you know, 12 years or so, my mom's sick. I'm at her house. I'm taking care of her. Went there July 3rd, ended up staying there till what, January, wasn't it? I think it was until
something
January.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Long time.
It was an everyday thing, and luckily my day-to-day job was really cool about it. I said, hey, you know, go ahead and stay there. It's no big deal. Just work from there. So I was able to work remote and take care of my mom. And I found myself alone a lot of times and just driving through, and there's a local comic book store. And I was like, oh, let's go in there and check it out. And it was like, you know, and plus talking to you about comic books for the last few years before that, just kind of
right.
Like, oh, shit. And then I get in and I'm like, okay, this is... I like this. And, you know, now I make a lot more money than I did back when I was a teenager, obviously, and I'm 42 now, so I can afford to get some of the books that I really wanted to get, like the Green Arrow, Green Lantern, is it 85? Is that the one with the Speedy with the needle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great book. I got that, and I was able to get some other things, and you know, my Iron Man number one, and some other, I was able to get the books that I wanted to get.
Right. You know? Yeah, when you get older, you can afford to buy the stuff you want.
Yeah. So now things, but the problem is I've started a box at a local store here up in Bothell and or Mill Creek, Mill Geek Comics.
That's two shout outs.
I know. Is that crazy? That is nuts. But anyways, you know, I read all these books that come in, but God, there's so many of them because I get so much interest in what I want to read that I don't... There's just too many books. You know what I mean? Too many books in my closet. Too many books around my bed. It looks like I'm 12 years old again, which my inner child is going, hooray! But my adult life is going, too much clutter, and I go nuts, right? Because I'm very much a minimalist. I don't like a lot of stuff. I never have. I like to have just what I need, and then I'm happy. You know what I mean? And then I'm quick to get rid of stuff. But with comic books, it's a little different because, you know, but once I read it, I don't go back and read them again. It's rarely. If I do, I'd rather just download a digital copy if I can.
Right.
Or just buy the trade paperback.
See, I think comics should come with a digital copy, in my personal opinion, because like...
So a lot of them do, though. Like a lot of the Marvel ones come with a digital copy.
Marvel ones do, but you have to peel a thing to get them and...
Yeah, that drives me nuts. You shouldn't have to do that. There should just be a piece of paper inside there that has your code, and then you can just put it back in the book and call it good without having to...
Right. I wish you could do, like, I don't know how they would do it, but, like, I would probably buy more comics a month if it came with a physical copy for me to put in my bin and say, oh, I collected this because I have that collector book in my brain. And, two, if I could just read it on my... I like to read comics. I mean, I like to read them physically, too. It's nice, but... More often than not, if I could just have it on my phone or my tablet and just flip through it there and read it, like, on the train or on the bus when I'm going to work.
Yeah, the tablet's nice because then you have
buy more
comic book sized. Real quick, though, so the point is I got a lot of comic books, but a lot of them are newer the last 3-4 years. So I think I'd like to get them bundled, but I'd like your help to go through them and decide which one I should get rid of.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the point.
I've been, as you know, but people listening don't know, I've been doing... buying and selling comic books since the 90s with my dad, so I have lots of knowledge on that shit and stuff. Sorry, Jack came in. If we do post this upline, which I think we should because the support's pretty good, I'll cut that out.
Yeah, no worries. You always put them in. I mean, it's life.
Right.
We're not professional broadcasters here.
Fuck you. I am a professional.
Not yet. Have you gotten paid for it?
Does sex count?
No.
Then no.
Well, then you're not a professional.
Damn it.
When we get a sponsor, then you could say you're a professional.
I could say that my comic book is sponsoring the show with no money.
Shut up.
It doesn't count if you sponsor your own show, right?
So I guess in the roundabout way, we both feel that the legacy stuff is cool that they're doing some numbers because it appeals to us, but lame in the way they're implementing it.
So I think it's cool only if they stick with it.
Right. If they go back in a year and be like, we're relaunching, it's like, right. Can we just agree that, is it Quesada? Is that how you say his name?
I think it's Quesada.
Quesada.
I don't know.
He's just joking. Not doing it. I don't want to say he's a bad person or that he sucks because I don't know him. You know what I mean? I've never seen him really do an interview.
I have.
He might be a really cool guy. And his artwork is pretty good. I mean, he's not a bad artist.
No, his art is fantastic. And I just to interrupt you, I have seen interviews with him and stuff. And he comes across as a guy who actually seems to care about the comics and the stories and stuff. But
I'm wondering if he's just listening to the people around him too much.
Well,
this.
The ending of that thought was he sounds like he cares about the characters, but he's also very much a businessman, right? Yeah. So he's driven by the money side and the business side as well. And it depends on which interview you watch with him. But yeah, I think if they stick with the renumbering and just go with it, and instead of trying to cancel a series or relaunch a new series, they say, okay, this storyline's not working. Let's end it, get in a new creative team, and just keep going with the numbering, because people who have been in comics for years want to have – there's something to be told about saying, oh, look, I started drawing – if you're an artist, I started drawing Spider-Man on Spider-Man issue 756 on the main storyline, not on – On volume 4, number 30. Fuck that. That's retarded. I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, and it's also what? I mean, it's not what. It's. I'm just going to say this. I think he's doing a terrible job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that company has gone downhill. And it's sad because you look at all the movies. Where are they getting their inspiration? It's not from shit that's being written in the last 5 years. It's all the stuff from, like, Claremont and all the stuff that came before.
Right. Well, they did do Civil War and Age of Ultron, but those were also new, but newer-ish, you know. But they're
newer-ish.
They modified them a ton.
Listen, all I know is if you keep resetting everything and you're not having a good enough arc that allows characters to develop within and go beyond, you're going to run out of material for your movies and your TV shows.
Right.
It's going to start being like the frickin' TV shows in the 90s where they'd try to do a comic book and it would last for like a day and people were like, that was crap.
Well, I think about if they were relaunching every 2 years back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I mean, how many stupid series of Superman, Batman, or X-Men, or Fantastic Four you would have from those time frames? Like, okay, well, I like the storyline, but does it count? Is it canon? You know, what series was that in? It gets too confusing when they keep relaunching shit. Like, when I bought a collection of Marvel stuff a couple years ago, and it had Captain America number 1. It had like 16 copies of it, but some of them were from 2011, some of them were for 2013, and there was no way to tell the difference in them because they used the same fucking design on the front for Marvel on the red bars. So you couldn't tell which one was from which series because they had the same price. They look like the same kind of style of artwork, and the only way you could find out is if you knew what it was, or if you opened it up, because Marvel doesn't put a fucking date on their cover, which pisses me off. They don't put September 2017. They you have to go inside to find out what month it's from, which is annoying as shit. But
you know what it sounds like to me, Johnny, is that you love the Marvel characters and the universe that was created, but you feel dismayed on the way that they've handled it moving forward.
I would agree.
DC has been pretty freaking good to go. You know what I mean? They've been status quo for a long time. You know what you're getting with DC. They don't allow people to mess with their stuff very much.
Well, they do, and but when they not do, in the they same generally way. Make it. Yeah, they do. You can mess with the DC stuff, and they do that, but they still keep their main characters still have their long-going series. I mean, I was very upset with New 52 when it first started. I was like, no, you don't. Like, you don't end Action Comics. You don't end Detective Comics. Fuck you. Those were around since the 30s, right?
Snyder did such a great job on Batman, though.
No, the stories were great, but I'm saying the numbering.
But they could have done it with the same numbering system.
Right. And with Rebirth, they brought back the numbering. I'm like, okay, good. They brought those back. Those, in my opinion, those two series should never be renumbered. Those two by far. I also don't think they should never have ended Batman or Superman either, but at bare none, the two comics that are responsible for creating this entire industry we love should stay, you know, should keep their numbering.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It's hard to argue that one.
You're right. You know, I do love a lot of the Marvel characters. You know, I grew up watching the X-Men cartoon. You know, I loved that cartoon. I was a huge the first comic book I ever bought off the shelf with my own money was Wolverine 50 by Larry Hama. Like, that was the first comic I ever bought with my own money. Now, I had comics before
Wolverine
that.
Number 50.
Yeah, it's the one with the yellow cover with the slashes in the front of it.
And I remember when Wolverine number 1 came out and how big a deal it was for the Unlimited series to finally begin.
But no, so I grew up on I grew up reading Wolverine. Like when I was a kid, the comic books that I would read were Superman, Batman, and Wolverine. Those three were my comics. I read Superman mostly because my dad was in the Superman, so I wanted to read something he read. So I wanted to be so I had something to talk to him about. I read Batman because, you know, it's Batman. And I read Wolverine because he had fucking claws on his hands. How cool is that? You know?
Right. Like Wolverine was a very cool character. I mean,
I had recurring dreams where I would be Wolverine. I'm not lying. As a kid. I'd be I got claws. Fuck yeah.
No, I could be completely lying about this. I could be making this up. But I'm pretty sure I read an article. They talked about Wolverine in the 70s and how people were not real happy with that character at the beginning. They didn't like him, or you know what I mean? And Marvel just kept shoving it down people's throat. I need to go back and look that up, because I think it's an interesting dynamic. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and originally he was supposed to die. Originally he was supposed to be a one issue character. He was supposed to be a one issue Hulk villain that at the end of it either died or never came back again.
Liked him.
People did like him, and then he came back. He was a totally different, like the 1970s Wolverine is very different than what we got in the Frank Miller series and the ongoing series, because, you know, it just they had to, you know, when you create a character back then, you just create a concept and you'd figure it out later.
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. My first comic book I think I ever got was Transformers number 1.
Oh, geez.
Of the miniseries. And G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, also by Larry Hama.
Yeah, it wasn't number 1. It was something, I can't remember which one it was. But my first comic book was Transformers. And oddly enough, I didn't buy it. My brother gave it to me.
Nice.
And he got me into comic books because he was collecting comic books. And he collected weird ones. They're not weird. I mean, he collected Alpha Flight, and we collected X-Factor, and we did X-Men and Spider-Man. So we didn't do any DC.
Right.
You know? We just didn't. I mean, everybody just read Marvel, you know, around us.
Well, Marvel was an easier read as far as, like, Marvel was the one that came up with the concept of a universe, right? All these characters live in a universe, and they hooked you in because you'd read Spider-Man, and then, let's say, Professor X would show up, so you have to read X-Men and get the other part of the story or whatever. So Marvel had the thing, you know, they created in the 60s, you know, this vast universe of characters, right? So Fantastic Four could show up in Spider-Man shows up in X-Men, you know, which DC was doing, but not to the extent. DC was more of a self-contained universe, right? Each Superman took care of Superman, Batman took care of Batman, World's Finest, which is Superman-Batman crossover issues. They'd have some storylines like Brave and the Bold where characters would cross over, but generally speaking, in the Batman series, you were going to get Batman stories without other characters coming in. Wonder Woman, you'd get Wonder Woman stories, you know, shit like that. Marvel created the whole concept of crossing over storylines and intertwining storylines, which was revolutionary.
Smart.
Right. A great marketing tip or ploy. Good job, Stan Lee. But it also created a down trickle of it, you know, decades later. Is like, well, you know, you as a new reader in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to read Extinction Agenda from X-Men or, you know, whatever storyline, you had to buy 13 X-Men books and 12 other books that you would normally not buy to read the whole, if you wanted the whole story. And
they did that on purpose. You know that.
Oh, yeah, they did. So, like, growing up, and, you know, you're not wrong earlier when you said that I like the Marvel characters, but I don't like what they do with the comics. Is that's specifically why I didn't like Marvel comics, because I didn't want to buy 15 comics to read one damn storyline in Wolverine. I wanted to buy Wolverine and read Wolverine stories. I didn't want to read a bunch of crossover events. And, you know, DC's kind of did that a little bit, but never to the extent of what Marvel did, right? Like,
well, Crisis on Infinite Earth.
But that was
a big crossover, wasn't it?
That was, but that was a self-contained 13-issue story that told a whole story. So here's the difference between DC and Marvel from that time period, right? Marvel would tell the story, but if you wanted the whole story, you'd have to read multiple books, and there would be story elements in each book, so you would miss out on pieces, right? DC had like their Legends event, right? They'd have a miniseries, Legends 1 through 6 or whatever, right? Which told the whole story. Right. And then like Wonder Woman, Superman, and Batman, they had Legends crossover comic books. But if you didn't read those, you didn't miss out on the main story of Legends. Or if you just read the Batman stories, you would get a little bit of stuff from the Legends stuff, but you wouldn't have to go read Legends to find out what happened in Batman, right?
Right.
They still stuck to the whole in their storyline, so but there's more.
What do you think was the first major crossover event for Marvel then? It wasn't Secret Wars, right? Because that was like a contained miniseries. And Secret Wars 2, wasn't that like a contained miniseries? Like you could read all the Secret Wars, the miniseries, and you'd have the complete story. But was it like Fall of the Mutants?
I don't know. Fall of the Mutants was the 90s.
That's the first. Was it? No, I don't think it was, dude.
Was it the 80s? I don't know. I can't remember.
Fall of the Mutants. If only we could look this up.
There we go. The first.
1988. Yeah.
Let's see. According to Wikipedia, was.
March 1988.
The first.
From January to March.
Yeah, the first big crossover event. There was ones before, but the first big one for Marvel was Contest of Champions, 1982.
It was called what?
Contest of Champions, 1982. Which I don't know.
Don't even remember that one.
Yeah, I don't know if that crossed out over into other storylines, but. Oh, here's one. So I'm just looking at Wikipedia here. Like, in the 70s, there was the Avengers Defenders War, which crossed over Defenders 8 through 11 and Avengers 115 through 118. There was
that's all them playing with the idea.
Right. In 73, 74, there was the Thanos War, which was Iron Man 55, Captain Marvel 25 through 33, Avengers 125, Marvel Future 12, and Daredevil 97 through 105. One. Yeah, that's probably one of the first big ones there. And that's, you know, you had to read, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different series to get the whole storyline. And 5 series that aren't
terrible.
I mean, the only ones in those 5 that are even related is Iron Man and Avengers. I mean, Captain Marvel, Marvel Future, and Daredevil have nothing to do with anything, any of them.
Yeah.
So that was 73, 74. There was one in 71, 72, the Mr. Klein War, which was Daredevil 78 through 84, Iron Man 41 through 45, and then Submariner 42. It was like, what the, I don't know.
Yeah, and what the heck's going on?
They started getting bigger. And then Secret Wars was 84, 85, which was the Beyonder, which I think Secret Wars was made just to create toys or something like that. I can't remember. But that was self-contained. So Secret Wars 1 was self-contained.
That's totally legitimate, too, to say that, dude, that it was made to make toys. Because I remember being, 10? Because that was, 84?
Yeah, 84, 85.
Yeah, so I was, 10, 11, and I remember all of a sudden... Because it's funny, you said you grew up on the X-Men cartoon. I grew up on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And I remember watching that, and then all of a sudden you're seeing commercials for Secret Wars. They had, the Spider-Man, motorcycle Secret Wars. I mean, just a bunch of weird stuff all of a sudden for, and they kept referencing Secret Wars. But was it a crossover event, though? I thought it was just a contained miniseries.
So Secret Wars 1 was a contained miniseries, 1 through 12.
Secret Wars 2
Secret Wars 2 was a huge crossover event because it was Secret Wars 2, 1 through 9, Amazing Spider-Man 268, 273, 274, Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man 111, and then the list goes on.
But,
it was
those offshoots weren't tied in. They were more like add-ons, you know what I mean? They were, supplementary stories. They weren't, you didn't have to read them to get the full effect of the main story of Secret Wars 2 in the miniseries. You know what I mean?
No, but if you wanted the whole story.
I mean, yes, it was a crossover, but you got the whole, you got the gist of it. Like, Fall of the Mutants, you had to read each individual thing to even get the story.
Mutant Massacre was before Fall of the Mutants. In 86.
Mutant Massacre.
Yeah, that was X-Men. That was Uncanny 112 through 113, New Mutants 46, X-Factor 9 through 11, Thor 373, 374, Power Pack 27.
I guess maybe Fall of Mutants for me, though, is the marketing that went into it. You know what I mean? Every single issue said Fall of Mutants on it. And then they did another one after that, remember, was Inferno. Had my favorite character.
Mm-hmm. There was Inferno. Magic. There was... Yep. The Evolutionary War, there's Acts of Vengeance, which was not a Ghost Rider thing, but that was a huge one, crossing 15 different series.
Acts of Vengeance. Yeah, I think that was I didn't collect all those. The only one I had collected all of them for was Fall of the Mutants and Inferno. And then I was done with the crossover stuff because I was like, this is too much.
Right.
It's too much. I mean, I'm 13 years old. I can't afford to buy all this.
Right. Well, then in the 90s, you had, you know, Extinction Agenda. You had the Infinity Gauntlet. You had Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, Maximum Carnage. Maximum Carnage was actually really fucking good. But
was it good?
Yeah, Maximum
Carnage. That was the one with, yeah.
No, that's actually one of my favorite Spider-Man stories. Yep, yep. Onslaught. Yeah, Inferno. Yeah, tons of
I liked Inferno because it was all dealing with magic, right? M-A-G-I-K.
Yep.
And that was Peter's younger sister, Ileana, right? Ileana Rasputin.
Yep. I guess
I just liked her because she just looked cool.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the point is, I mean, like, they both companies did it to an extent. I mean, DC definitely did it too. Marvel did it too. Marvel pioneered that whole thing. But my whole thing is, like, I don't care if people do crossover finish. Just don't make me have to buy 15 books to read a damn story.
Yeah. Know? I mean, if you're DC, and I mean, let's just be honest. In the 80s, they were getting their ass handed to them by Marvel, right? Every kid I knew was Marvel,
except,
Marvel.
Except for Batman. You know?
Except for, well, Batman's
always been
his
own
man.
Thing. Batman's
he
always
just
been
goes
Batman.
On.
Yeah. You can't, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, he just goes on and on.
Like, Batman to me is the one comic book series that throughout history, except for maybe the silliness of the 60s, right? Which just everything was silly in the 60s for DC.
Right.
But like, starting with, like, Neil Adams in the 70s, it's like every decade, one of the best books, both art wise, story wise, and selling wise, has always been Batman. Like,
I think people can relate more to Batman. You can't relate to Superman. You can't relate to a mutant or Wolverine or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
You can't relate to Spider-Man. But Batman, he's human. He has no special powers. He's just, I mean, you could say he's the greatest athlete that the human species has ever produced. Right? And the greatest mind. When I say mind, I mean, like, you know, how smart he is. Right?
Right.
You know, you could say that. And then he's got all the money, and that's always good. What but at the end of the day, he's still a human, and he's still just a normal guy that's wearing a suit, which is kind of funny.
Wearing bat ears.
Think about it. But yeah, and bat ears and going out and kicking ass. And I think the majority of people, except for ones that have a screw just completely gone, want to see people do good in the world, right? And want to justify, you know, fix the wrongs. And that's what he does, right? He fixes the wrongs and justifies his actions by making things right. And I think a lot of people want to be that way. And I think it's easy to look at Batman and say, that's somebody I can aspire to be, because you could be him because he's just a normal person. And I think that's what's so awesome about him. You know what I mean? That's how I always think about
right.
it.
Right. I think too, for more for Batman, the reason why Batman's been able to sustain for so long, being such a top seller, more than just, I'll back that up real quick saying, you know, I like Superman a lot. I like the Superman stories that deal with him being a hopeful character, and that him, I like the stories where his strength of a character to beat people is not in his muscles, but in his, how he deals with people, his compassion. Those are the better Superman stories to me. Like if you read All-Star right. Superman, that one's fantastic by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, I think. I can't pronounce his name. But Batman wins out every decade because it's not just Batman. Batman has the best rogues gallery and the best, you know, backup team behind him of any series, you know. You're not going to find.
How can you have a better villain than the Joker?
Right.
You can't.
You can't. And, I mean, look, he's got the Joker. He's got Penguin. He's got Riddler. He's got Poison Ivy. Two-Face. He has these classic characters that have survived for 60, 70 years that have been successfully brought into the modern era. You know, Superman, those guys have villains from the 60s and the 50s, but they fail being translated to the modern era. Batman's villains.
And 90% of them? Human.
Right.
90% of them? Human. Just normal people that just, you know, broke.
Right. And he has. And
like, you know, Joker, there's nothing special about Joker, right? I mean, he's just.
Well, I mean, depends on which version of Joker you're looking at, but essentially, yeah.
But the classic, everyday, when we go in, year out, Joker is always going to be a normal guy that broke. He went crazy and has
just one bad day.
The mental capacity to do this thing. He had one. Yeah, that's like his classic line, right? Yep. Takes one bad day.
It's one bad day to turn from Batman and Joker.
And that's what's so cool about Batman and Joker is the antithesis of what they are.
Right.
And they both had one bad day, and Batman took it to justice, and Joker took it for mass murder.
Right. And all, but not just the villains too. Look at Batman's, like, you know, his people behind him, his helpers, you know, his team. You've got the various Robins. You've got Red Hood, Batgirl, Batwoman. You've got Nightwing. You have these characters that are, in themselves are dynamic and have a lot of rich story behind them that all build up into Batman.
Are you excited for Batgirl? Are you excited for Batgirl movie?
Actually, I think it's actually Batwoman that he's doing, not Batgirl.
I thought Joss Whedon was doing Batgirl.
I know. I think it was misreported.
Really?
Yeah, because I've actually seen it. Maybe it's Batgirl. Okay, so I just googled it and it says Batgirl. But I recently was seeing it labeled as Batwoman, and I was like, that's a totally different character, and I could see Joss Whedon doing that very good.
So it was announced that Wonder Woman is domestically brought in the most money of any DC movie.
Yeah,
domestically.
Has it?
So
did it?
That's what
I'll check right now.
Wonder Woman domestic gross.
Well, I got it right here. $346 million domestic gross. So out of the DC Extended Universe, it is it topped BVS by $16 million.
Right. Yeah, Wonder Woman reigns supreme as DCEU's highest earning U.S. film, according to The Verge.
Yep.
And this was posted 2 days ago. So yeah,
I'm looking at Box Office Mojo right now, which has updates.
And who was the director? Patty Jenkins?
Yep, Patty Jenkins.
Is that right?
Yep.
So if you're going to do Batgirl, is it smarter to have another female-led director do that movie and have maybe Joss Whedon be more like an executive producer?
So I would, if it was any other director besides Joss Whedon, I would agree with you. However, I think Joss Whedon very much understands how to write a strong female character because he's done it multiple times before.
You're thinking of Buffy and
The characters he had on Firefly and Dollhouse. I mean, he has a history of being able to capture the female heroine and doing a good job of getting the humor in there, getting the characteristics in there. So if there was a male director I was going to say could do a solid Batgirl or Batwoman or whatever he's doing, female-led superhero movie, it would be him. However, I do think if it was another female director with a good writing staff behind it that knew the character and could do it, being a female writing it or being a female directing a female character is going to give you an edge to make it more authentic, just straight up. There's no doubting about that.
Yeah, 'cause to me, was it Scott Snyder? Is that his name?
Zack Snyder?
That was doing all the movies?
Zack.
Was Scott, it Zack Snyder?
Scott Snyder wrote... Scott Snyder's the Batman writer.
Yeah, Zack Snyder. With him stepping down, and it was unfortunate the way that happened, but...
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
With him stepping down, and Joss Whedon coming in, like, to me, if I was Warner Brothers, I'd be like, you know what? If you want to direct films in this universe, great. You know what I mean? But we'd really like you to helm up pulling them and tying them all together and make a cohesive universe. Because that's the one thing Marvel has over it, right?
Right, they have Kevin Feige.
And they've done an amazing job. I mean, they just have, you know. And if they can get Fox on board, oh my God, can you imagine?
Oh, on Marvel side, they got Fox on board, yeah.
Oh, can you imagine Secret Wars 2? I mean, come on.
Oh, jeez. or an actual Civil War movie?
Yeah. I'm wondering if what they're really going to do. I mean, because they haven't, like, announced any dates for it. They haven't done anything. They just said he's directing Batgirl. But that wasn't that before Zack Snyder stepped down?
Yeah. They brought him in on... I think what happened, what I kind of heard might have happened, is that he...
It's all speculation.
It's all speculation. I don't know shit. I have no insider information. But what I read or heard was basically that Warner Bros. Wanted Joss Whedon to come on board to help them, to either, you know, to help them get people to like the universe better because people love Joss Whedon. And they basically said, hey, come do a film. What film do you want to do? And he said, I want to do Batgirl or Batwoman. I think Batgirl. And then when Zack Snyder, his daughter passed away and he decided to step down, Joss Whedon graciously stepped up and said, they asked him and he'd finish the film for them. Now, to DC's credit, to Warner Bros.' credit, they did offer to delay the release of Justice League until Zack Snyder was able to come back and do it, but he decided to say no, just let somebody else finish it, keep your release date, don't mess things up, I need time off for it. Which, much respect to both of them, Snyder and to Warner Brothers for what they did. On the complete other side, I am happy that Snyder's off of it and Whedon's on it, because I think that
you weren't happy with Snyder's direction.
I wasn't. No,
films,
I'm not.
Put it
no,
that way.
I'm very sad for the reason why
I'm
he's
in the
off
minority of,
it. Of
really loving Batman versus Superman. I loved that film. I thought. I mean, I don't like the whole Martha scene, you know, but that aside, I love the rest of the film. I thought Batfleck was amazing. I can't even see anybody else being Batman.
Batman was amazing.
It's hard.
Batman was amazing. Like, here's the thing about the Snyder movies, right? I think the actors he has, besides Jesse Eisenberg, are great in their roles,
right?
I think...
You didn't like Jesse Eisenberg as Luther?
You mean I didn't like him playing the Riddler? That's who he's playing. That's not Luther. He's playing the Riddler. I mean, look at it. Think about it. He's playing Edward Nygma. He's not playing Lex Luthor. So, no, I did not like...
He's a good Edward Nygma as that guy on Gotham, man. Yes. Oh, he does a great job.
Yeah, I did not like his Luthor at all, but that's beside the point. I think, you know, Affleck did great as Batman. Henry Cavill did... I like him as Superman. I wish they'd give him more to do and let him become Superman, not being a super sulky guy. And Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman is fantastic. I just think with Batman vs Superman, right, they tried to take too many storylines and cram it into a movie, and it didn't work for me. Like, I enjoy pieces of that movie. Like, I enjoy the first part. I enjoy
the fight scene was awesome though, man, between him and Batman. Yeah. I thought that was great.
Yeah, all 8 minutes of it was wonderful. But
you know what the thing is when they announced that.
Here's the thing. The fight scene looked great, but it was very, very done, very uncharacteristic of Superman. Like, Batman gets him with the kryptonite grenade, right, to weaken him up the first time. Okay, I'll buy it. Right. That makes sense. He's not going to fall for it a second time. Superman's not an idiot. He's not.
Right.
You're not going to hit him again with the same thing. It's not going to happen. That's not how Superman works. And it basically, you have to give a guy directing Superman who doesn't understand Superman, you know.
Well, he doesn't like Superman, right?
No,
did he come out and say that?
He does not like Superman, which is like, why the hell would you let him direct a movie?
Right. To me, it's like, you're going to do Batman versus Superman. Why are you doing that? I love the film. I mean, I'm going to say this. Wonder Woman's theme music is the greatest theme music ever put to film. That is...
Oh, it's great.
It's not just great. It's the greatest to me. I mean, I could fucking wake up to that thing and get me going throughout the day. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculously cool.
You know shit's going to happen. Shit's going down when that comes on.
Yeah. And you know, and I kind of, when you're watching it, you're like, why don't you just let Wonder Woman beat this thing up? Because she's kicking the shit out of that guy.
Right. And
you don't even need the other two.
No, right.
And it's like, I don't understand. Why do you give the spear to Superman to put into Doomsday when you can just give it to her and it'd be done?
Yeah, it's not.
And Doomsday's no
not,
one would
Doomsday's
die.
Not going to kill her. Yeah, there's a lot of plot holes. I mean, like the whole Doomsday fight. Okay, so if they would have just taken out the whole
Doomsday
plot.
I didn't like
plot,
Doomsday because it's not Doomsday.
No.
It's not Doomsday.
If they would have taken out that whole Doomsday subplot in that movie, or well, main, not even a subplot, it's a secondary main plot. And like taking that out and just done a Batman v Superman movie, or just done the Dark Knight like you wanted, or the Dark Knight Rises like you wanted to. Sorry, Dark Knight Returns, not Rises. Just done that like you wanted to, and left out Doomsday and made another movie with Doomsday in it.
That's what I was gonna say. When they announced they're doing Batman versus Superman, my assumption was, oh my God, they're doing the Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
Because why would you not? That's what that battle scene is from. That's based off of that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? All the electrical, that suit, everything is from The Dark Knight Returns. Why would you not do that movie? Did you watch the animated movie?
Yeah.
The two-part? It was amazing.
Yeah.
They did a great job on it. I thought it was amazing. I think they did a great job on it. It's like, why wouldn't you just do that? Just do that. And you can gray up Ben Affleck's hair, and he'd be an amazing Batman at 50, 55.
Right.
Because I think that's what he is in Dark Knight Returns, like 50, 55, right?
Yeah, right.
And so he'd be awesome. And so why not do that instead of doing this whole new storyline that is not in any comic books and is weird, and now you've had General Zod become Doomsday, which doesn't make sense because that's not who Doomsday is.
Right, no, and Riddler Luthor.
I love the film for just the microcosm of the film itself, right? Just a standalone storyline of what it is. That's it. But I wouldn't be offended if they canned it and do The Dark Knight and do, you know what I mean? And even use Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Ben Affleck as Batman and Henry I don't even know how to say his last
Cavill.
Name.
Henry Cavill.
Cavill, yeah. As Superman, which I think he does a pretty good job.
Yeah, no, he has the look for it. He has the I think he has the range for it if they would just let him not be like sad, sulky Superman, you know? Like,
well, that's the director, though. Right. That's the direction.
Superman's supposed to be this beacon of hope who he's got all this power in a world full of cardboard and chooses not to use it most of the time to find other ways out of situations. He's not just,
right.
You know.
Oh, but see, that was part of the part I did like about the movie was the political aspects of people freaking out and saying in Batman's stance on he could completely destroy the world if he wanted to. And we just have to assume that he's going to make the right decision every time.
Right.
And is it his choice to interfere in political or government's time, right? Is it who? Why does he get to decide when he gets to go into a situation and make it right in his mind?
Right. No. Right? Yeah, I get that.
Because, and I like that aspect. I don't. They never really talked about that in Richard Donner's versions of Superman in the movies.
No.
You know. Not to that extent, and I thought that I kind of like that. I wish they would explore that more, and because to me that would be the reason that he would start working with like the President of the United States, because the President, you know, in Dark Knight Returns, is the President that sends him to Gotham to take out Batman,
right?
You know, the Reagan-esque looking President, and I thought that was, you know, and having this whole control over somebody like that gives the public an assumption that he's only being used for the things that he needs to be used for and not just arbitrarily making decisions on his own because we can't stop him. And I could see that reasoning behind my mind or behind Batman's mind of why he would have the feelings that he had for him because, you know, he toppled buildings and killed a bunch of his employees, right?
Right, but the one story plot in those two movies, Man of Steel and Batman vs. BVS, right? That doesn't make sense. So you've got Superman who has been on Earth doing stuff, who's done nothing but good stuff, right? I mean, yeah, there was still a lot of destruction, but
right. Look
at why there was. If he hadn't done that destruction, the Earth would have ended, right? Like right. Humanity would have been destroyed by General Zod and his people. That's flat out. So
right. You
have this character or this guy who's done nothing but save people the entire time he's been on Earth. He's done nothing that would make someone question it. Who's not paranoid. Then you have Batman, who's supposed to be this beacon of logic and this beacon of intelligence, who gets completely irrationally upset with this character, this guy, or this superhero, who's done nothing bad.
I don't think it was irrational.
Though. No, it is.
I don't think it was irrational. No, he went into that. He went into the city. He's seen buildings being torn down,
okay.
And in his mind, he thought, if you weren't here, then those people wouldn't be here.
Right.
That's what he was thinking. Whether he's right or wrong is irrelevant.
No, no.
That's what his thought process
but think
was.
About it, though. When he goes after Superman, it's years later. So you're saying in that 5 years, he's still emotional about that building falling down, knowing the fact that if Superman hadn't done that, General Zod would have killed all of humanity. That's what I'm saying irrationally.
I think you would be emotional. God
no.
Dang, what was that?
Emotional in the time period.
I think you would be
emotional when it happens, right? But not years later and still go on and kill this guy or however long it's been.
I think, dude, if you owned a building and you were the CEO and owner and president of this company and you felt that your employees are family and then you watch 100 of your employees die in a building being collapsed because of the situation that happened, I think your emotions would be easy to reproduce at any time over a 5-year period. I don't think that it happened 5 years ago. Why are you still upset about it?
No. Still being upset is fine.
You got to think of the mentality. Yeah, but you got to think of the mentality of who Batman is. This is not you and me seeing it down and going, oh my fucking God, I want to kill you, and da 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 da. And 5 years later, you're still upset, but it's not the level of physicalness of it. No, we're not Batman. This guy is somebody who is always looking to justify the wrongs or make right the wrongs of the world and produce justice. And so in his mind, he was like, justice needs to be served.
But
has created, thousands of people have died in the city because of this. I can see why he would be upset for that amount of time.
No, okay, I'll give you that. Hear me out. I can see why he'd be upset for that, but Batman isn't, he's not, that's revenge. That's not justice. That's revenge. Batman's not a revenge character.
Well, that's what Batman does is revenge.
No, it's, he serves justice.
What do you mean?
So, here's the thing, too, right? Okay, so barring the fact that, okay, so if we're to buy that Batman is going to come at him years later to kill him for the deaths of 1,000 people, we have to assume that Batman is ignorant to the fact that Superman saved billions of people in that fight, okay? If Batman's ignorant to the fact that Superman saved the rest of humanity, then yeah, I'll give that to you. But if we understand that Batman is who he is, Batman, he will know that if Superman hadn't done that shit against Zod, the whole of humanity would have been dead. So yeah, he'll be upset, but he's not going to try to kill the guy who saved the fucking world. It's not going to happen. Batman's not a fucking idiot. So that whole the whole reason,
but both their moms are named Martha,
right? But that the whole reason why they had there's plenty of reasons why Batman could fight against Superman, right? But in this universe, they have not set up anything bad against Superman except for superficial shit created by whatever. He hasn't done anything bad, so it doesn't make sense for Batman to go after
him.
Well,
that's why
they
should have just done Dark Knight, though.
Right. But in the movie, it doesn't make any sense why Batman's that upset at Superman years later and wants to kill him, when Batman should know that had that fight not happened, the world would be Krypton. You know, be Krypton.
I think Batman's a one-track mind. And I think that it makes sense to me that if he has something in his head, it takes more than just a couple years for it to get out. He needs to have
Batman's not one track. No. Batman's not one track. Batman is a strategist.
You don't think he's one track?
No, fuck no. He's a strategist. He plans things out. He knows the outcome of multiple situations.
He's a strategist to have his one track of what he wants be accomplished. He's not a strategist.
But his one
strategist his one track, on having a multitude of things.
But his one track. Okay, we'll give it a one track mind. But his one track has never been, I'm going to go kill this guy. Otherwise, he would have killed a Joker years ago. He's not like a brutal killer like that. He's not just I'm going to go kill this guy right here. Because then why has the Joker been around forever? Why didn't he kill the Joker after he killed Jason Todd? That's not who Batman is.
Do you think it makes sense for Batman not to kill anybody?
No, not at all.
Because
not
in the
at all.
First, like in the first few episodes, comic books, right? There's one of the covers shows him with a gun, like an actual rifle.
Yeah, no, he carried a handgun.
Right.
He carried a 45 on him for a long time.
Was it 40? Yeah. So it's kind of weird that he used to kill people, right? At the beginning in the 40s.
He mostly would shoot him like in the leg or something, incapacitate him.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I mean, he did. Yeah, he did kill.
You know, something
but...
we should do a little research on, because I think it's weird that. Well, I mean, it's an evolution of a character, so it's not weird. I shouldn't say that.
So
it's just weird that his philosophies and his and what he does and the people that he's dealing with, and he doesn't kill.
Well, here's the thing: the whole thing about Batman doesn't kill is it's misconstrued, right? People shouldn't think Batman never kills. People should think Batman tries not to kill. Right.
Not to.
So,
yeah, that's true.
In the
that's
movie,
true.
When he's got the fucking guns on his car and he's shooting people, that's not Batman. Has Batman killed people? Absolutely. But he's not, he doesn't do it, he doesn't go out to murder people.
I thought it was weird with him with the actual machine guns on his car. I was like, that's not, you don't normally
that's
see that with Batman.
So out of character.
He will use it as defense. Yeah, it was. I liked it, though. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, no, it was cool, but it was out of character. It was out of character, you know. People need to understand. Yes, Batman kills, but Batman tries not to kill. That's the thing. That's the difference.
Who's the? You know, you always hear people say Moon Knight is Marvel's attempt at Batman.
Moon Knight's fucking crazy. No, you're wrong.
Well,
Moon
he's Na- crazy in
Moon
the
Knight,
iteration that they have.
Moon Knight's a
he's
good,
not always crazy. Though.
Moon Knight's a good series, a good character, but Moon Knight is batshit. You know, he's pretty much always been crazy.
Yeah, but that's what they always say. And to me, I don't make sense. To me. I always thought the Punisher was the closest thing that Marvel had to Batman. But just more violent and with guns, obviously.
Right.
But he's got a one-track mind on hunting down criminals. He doesn't have the rogues gallery, obviously. But, I mean, I don't think he has one. But
no, he kills them.
Yeah, he kills everybody. But to me, I mean, it's a single guy, you know, no powers, uses strategy... uses his intelligence and uses his, and then when he needs, and then a lot of times his brute strength, obviously, or his ability to fight. I mean, he just doesn't hide his identity.
Right.
He's not rich.
See, I always thought.
But he's got tons of gadgets. He's got tons of gadgets. He's got, you know.
Yeah.
Who'd you think?
Oh, I always thought the Marvel version of Batman was more akin to Daredevil. Just because of Daredevil's history. I mean,
Yeah, that's clear. That's a good analogy.
Character wise, superhero versions and secret identity versions. I think they're more like Matt Murdock and Bruce Wayne, barring the money aspect, are more alike as far as how they handle things. And so are Batman and Daredevil. I mean, I think Daredevil is a little bit more of a brutal character than Batman was originally, but Batman became that in the '80s. You know, thanks to Frank Miller, who also did that to Daredevil too in the '70s. Right. But still. I think they're a little more closer in their ideals and how they handle stuff. I think Punisher, I can see the correlations between Punisher and Batman, but Punisher is like Batman to the extreme that murders people, right? Because Punisher is a straight up murderer. He hunts people and kills them. He doesn't
totally.
He's not like, oh, I'm gonna go stop this situation. He's like, oh, they're a rapist. I'm gonna go murder that person.
He just puts a bullet in their head. That's right. Why I think when we were talking the other day, and because you know you and I talk constantly throughout the day,
right.
And we're always I don't want to say we're arguing, but we're always arguing
pretty much
about dumb things like who would beat up who, and it's always stupid stuff.
And to be,
like,
and to be fair, I always win.
I honestly believe that Punisher would most likely kill Batman in the end, because he doesn't Batman will let up at some point. He will let up. And the Punisher doesn't.
So it's a scenario thing too, right? It's like,
and you can't say if you strip him down to sweats and a t-shirt and put him in an octagon, right? You don't know who's going to win that fight hand to hand. You can say, well, they've shown all this stuff with Batman, and he's, you know, the world's greatest martial artist, but Punisher holds his own against like Deadpool and against a bunch of people that would, you know what I mean?
Right.
He knows how to fight too. It's not like you can't just say that one is better than the other.
No, there's a great quote that I heard.
But you can say
there's a great quote that I heard about
who
would win in a fight versus this character, and it was a writer, and I can't remember who the writer was, but it's like the best quote that ever solved all these fights of who would win is the answer to who would win on character A versus character B is who's writing the book.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Who does the writer like more? They're gonna win. That's really the answer, because if you think about these characters, like, we can sit here and argue, and I could argue why Punisher would win, but I could also argue why Batman will win.
Right.
It's really a matter of situations.
To me, I think it's like if they didn't know who each other were, and they just like were in a jungle, right? I mean, just for a setting or a city, right? Still a jungle, but. And they started going at it, and they started fighting, and da-da-da-da-da. Batman's going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to just incapacitate this guy. And Punisher goes like, I'm going to fucking kill this guy. And this is how it's going to go, right? He's not going to let up,
right.
You know? But I think that if he's not able to kill the guy, and Batman's able to, and they stop fighting for whatever reason, like Batman gets away, or Punisher says, forget it, I'm done, or whatever... The strategy next time Batman's going to kill him.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean like, I don't mean like literally kill him, but kill him in the point that there's no way the only time the Punisher's going to win against Batman is when they first meet.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Right, exactly.
Because after that, Batman's going to know everything that he needs to do to beat you.
Right. Well, here's also the thing too, right? Think about this way. Okay. Here's a quick question for you. Who would win, Spider-Man or Batman?
That's a hard one, because Spider-Man is like, he's so strong and he's so fast.
But he's also incredibly naive.
Well, which version of Spider-Man are you talking about? If you're talking about 1988 Spider-Man, 1989 Spider-Man, Peter Parker in his 30s and all that, he's not naive. You're talking high school Peter Parker? Naive. Totally, totally different characters. You got to think about throughout the time, right? That's a tough one, because I don't think Batman could hit him. I don't think he'd ever be able to hit him.
Right. Well,
with anything.
The thing about Spider-Man, even in the 30s Spider-Man, when Spider-Man was in his 30s and stuff, even then, and I may be wrong on this, I haven't read a ton of Spider-Man, but the Spider-Man that I have read is whenever he comes up against a new opponent, a new villain he doesn't know, he always underestimates what they can do every time. And that's one of his characteristics that makes his books interesting, is because that first fight he goes into, he gets out of it, but he never really knows what he's doing against that new villain or whatever, right? And I think
but that's more of the Spider-Man learning to be Spider-Man.
Not even
when for the stuff that I read, when I remember, I mean, and I haven't read a Spider-Man book I read his new series, and they made him a billionaire and he owns a software company, and I was like, I'm done, I'm out. Spider-Man's a photographer for the Daily Bugle, and that's it.
Spider-Man's poor.
He's not a freaking billionaire. Yeah, he's poor, and he's just an everyday Joe living in New York City. That's what I love about Marvel more than DC, dude, is the real, actual landscapes.
Well,
they make it feel more real.
The difference is Marvel, the way I've heard it best described, is Marvel is men trying to be gods, and DC is gods trying to be men.
That's a good point. I like that.
And that's the best way.
Yeah, I like
the best
that.
The best, that's the best description of the two worlds I've ever heard, and it makes so much sense.
Who's your favorite DC character? Dropping Batman and Superman.
Dropping Batman and Superman. It's hard because I have a lot of secondary characters I like a lot. I really like Supergirl, just because of the way, like, the newer Supergirl, right? This, like, the way she interacts with people, and, like, she's angry, and Supergirl's actually more powerful than Superman. I don't know if you know that. Like, she's actually stronger than he is. But the reason why she's stronger is because she doesn't hold back like he does. And there's a lot more characters there. But right. I also really enjoy, like, I really like Blue Beetle, like the Jaime Reyes version of Blue Beetle. It's that whole, like, the beetle attaches to him. And
the kid that's doing it now.
Yeah, yeah. I like
those. Like, when you see, like, the new Teen Titans on cartoons and, right. and they have that one.
He's like, okay. he's like all tech based, and he morphs and stuff. I like him a lot too.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to pick a non Superman, Batman, DC hero, because I like a lot of them for very different reasons. You know, it's hard for me.
Mine are easy. Mine's Green Arrow and Flash and Lobo, and those three.
Yeah, I like those three too. I like Flash a lot. Flash is cool.
Yeah, my first real foray into Green Arrow was the Longbow Hunters by Mike Grell.
It's an amazing series.
And he moved him to Seattle, and it was just like, I was reading it, and I was just like, God dang, man, this was good writing. You know what I mean?
Right.
This is a good story, not just, you know, and the art was different. It was more, it felt more like a painting, even though I don't like it when I pick up a comic. I want my comic books to look like comic books. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like it when it's all like sometimes they do like the oil-based painting stuff. Or they do, you know, I don't like that. I can't get into it.
Did you like Kingdom Come by Alex Ross?
Right. I don't think I read that.
What?
Was it good?
Dude,
yeah.
There you go. Yeah, it's amazing.
Check it out. Kingdom Come. Yeah, I'll have to check it out by Alex Ross.
Well, it's written by Kurt Busiek and it's painted by Alex Ross.
Yeah. But I just picked up, you know, the nice thing is the Longbow Hunters are cheap right now.
I know, right? I have a set of them.
You know, that whole series is not that much, and
I don't know why. Part of me, I don't know, like, why it should be. It's an iconic series. If that was a Batman storyline, it'd be worth, you know, The Dark Knight Rises or Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, it'd be $25-$30 a book, but it's like $5, $6. I think I paid $2.50 at Mill Geek Comics.
Right,
that's a third plug, dude. Crazy as that, but no, but seriously, it was just such a good series, and I think what I liked about it is, you know, we grew up in the Seattle suburbs of Seattle, and it was in Seattle.
Right.
And it felt, and he was a normal guy going through real problems, not just, I'm fighting Darkseid, and then I'm fighting this guy, and then I'm fighting that guy, and oh, Superman's my buddy. You know what I mean? It wasn't all sugar plums and rainbows and stuff. It was like real world problems. And you're like, reading it, you're like, oh my God, I can, to a certain extent, I can relate.
Right. Well, Green Arrow,
to what this guy is doing.
Green Arrow was always a more interesting character than Batman was. I always thought, especially when Mike Grell took it over. When Mike Grell was doing Green Arrow, it was one of the best. Because, you know,
he was so flawed. Series.
Yeah, it was flawed, and it was well done. And Mike Grell's an amazing artist, and you know, it was just well done. And even when they relaunched Green Arrow with Kevin Smith writing it, with Matt Wagner doing the covers, even then Kevin Smith still kind of captured that essence of what Grell had created back in the '80s, and it was a very good series.
Like, do you watch Arrow on
yeah, I've watched Arrow.
CW? So I've watched it. I haven't watched the last season, but I've watched all the seasons before. And I do like that show. It's pretty, they do a pretty good job. But I wish they just would have done, I wish they just would have started with the Longbow Hunters.
Yeah, so that.
And just gone through that.
In my opinion, the show Arrow is basically, they wanted to do a Batman show, but they couldn't. So they took Green Arrow.
Right.
I mean, I like Arrow.
Be doing it, you
know? I like Arrow. I like Stephen Amell's Arrow. I like the cast. I like the drama they do. I mean, it's I enjoy it. You know, I like the Arrow and Flash shows. Yeah.
It's guilty pleasure.
It really is. I mean, I do enjoy it a lot.
Right.
But the Flash is so much better, dude. Yeah, I think the Flash show.
I love the Flash, but I actually think Supergirl's a better show.
Oh, you like your? We watched Supergirl at my house. We watched that one.
Yeah,
we
I love Supergirl.
I still prefer Flash.
I preferred Flash season one, yeah. But I really hope next season of Flash it's not just another speedster. That's the problem. We had three seasons of three speedster villains. You know?
Oh, they did. Yeah. They had Reverse, Zoom,
and then Savitar or whatever.
What's his name? Savitar. Or
Godspeed.
Yeah, Savitar. Yeah, that's true. They need to do some different villains now.
And
it's going to be tough.
And they follow the same trope, right? Season one, Harrison Wells, I'm not Reverse Flash. Just kidding, I'm Reverse Flash. Season two, Jay Carrick, I'm not Zoom. Right. Just kidding, I'm Zoom. Season three, it's all similar to stuff. You know, it's like do something different. You know, Flash has villains that aren't speedsters. Use those guys as the main villain.
Right.
I was really hoping season three would be a General Grodd season, but it wasn't.
Yeah, he has an interesting rogue gallery.
Yeah, Flash has another he's another good rogue gallery like Batman does.
Yeah, it's got an interesting one.
So going back to our tangent a couple minutes ago, the reason why I asked you who would win between Spider-Man and Batman is because if Punisher can't kill Spider-Man, how could he kill Batman, right?
If Spider-Man can't kill
Punisher. If Punisher can't kill Spider-Man, his first appearance, Punisher was trying to kill Spider-Man and couldn't do it.
Right.
He's talking about the Jackal.
Well, yeah, but he has spider sense.
Right.
Yeah, but he's got spider sense.
Right.
You're not going to shoot Spider-Man with a gun.
No. Well,
because he's gonna feel the bullet coming at any time. Unless you're Kraven, right? Kraven did it.
Right.
But he was able to trick him, and he had years of studying and researching Spider-Man, where Punisher had none.
Right. Well, but the point is...
And you're not going to just, you got to get him unawares, which is tough to do. Did you ever read that?
Just be Venom. Venom can do it.
Did you read Kraven's Last Hunt?
No, I didn't read that.
You never read Kraven's Last Hunt? That is the greatest Spider-Man story ever told. It is unreal. And then the funny thing is about Kraven's Last Hunt is that it was pitched to be a Batman story first, and DC said no.
Really? That's funny.
And the guy went to Marvel, and Marvel said, yeah, do it with Spider-Man. And it is amazing.
Nice.
So the whole concept, do you know anything about it?
No, I never, no.
Oh, the whole thing is Kraven comes back, right? And you know who Kraven is?
Yeah, Kraven Hunter, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. So he's crazy, right? And he brings up this Vermin is a character, and he's like a rat guy, and he lives in the sewer, and he gets him doing all this stuff for him. And then he basically has a bunch of stuff going on at once, and he's able to tranquilize Spider-Man. Shoots him, right?
Right.
Then he buries him alive. And then while he's buried, he takes the Spider-Man suit and he assumes the identity of Spider-Man and goes throughout and starts beating up criminals and does a better job being Spider-Man than Spider-Man. That was his whole goal. And then it has, dude, there's a classic cover of The Web of Spider-Man where he's coming up out of the grave. It is amazing. I can't believe you never read this storyline. It is so freaking good, dude. You have to read it. You really need to read it. I have it. I'll bring it over. You got to read it.
Yeah, bring it over. I'll read it.
Yeah, it was the best thing for them to do for Spider-Man. It really was. And then, and then at the end, I'm going to tell you the end because we're talking, and this is spoiler country, and this is what we do.
No spoilers.
yeah, exactly. At the end, Spider-Man comes back up, beats Vermin, beats Kraven, and then Kraven shoots himself in the head with a shotgun, kills himself.
Oh, jeez.
It is crazy, dude. I mean, I told you like the main storyline, but really you got to read it because you'll be like, the writing is so good. It is so good. And they did it across Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, and The Web of Spider-Man. But it's so good. I can't even. That's the only Spider-Man story worth reading. If you're going to read one Spider-Man story, that's the one to read.
I'll read it. And to be fair, I was 5 years old when that storyline came out.
That's okay.
But no, yeah, bring it over. I'll read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that was, a good long time for a dry run. We talked a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's heavy on the geek side, heavy on the comics. I mean, I'm sure as we go forward, that'll alleviate somewhat, but always be a backbone.
Well, yeah.
Because that's something we can just always just sit there and talk about.
Everything always comes back to comics or superheroes for us. That's fine, though.
It's because we like it. I mean, we have fun with it.
Right.
I don't care when people think, oh, you're such a geek. Well, it's not about being a geek, man. It's just It's you find something that you can be passionate about and have fun with. And why do I have to be 42 and be 42? Why can't I be 42 but enjoy what I liked when I was 15,
exactly.
14, 10?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I think that keeps that helps keep you young.
I concur.
I don't get it. Yeah. So what do you got planned today?
After this, I am going to get back to working on some pages for that book I'm working on.
Tell me what the book is.
So I, well, two things. First, right now I'm finishing up a 6-page story for Hellcat Press's Tales in the Public Domain, which I have 3 pages done.
Nice.
I'm getting those off to the letterer today, and then I have got to finish the last 3 pages before the 8th of July so I can actually make print in the book.
Nice.
It's a story written by a guy named David Thomas who lives over in London, but I got to finish it because I've been slacking on that. Once I finish that, which hopefully in the next couple of days, I'll be back to work on the Ions Anthology book, which is a book that I, a storyline that I created that I hired writers to come on to and write stories that I'm doing the art for. I finished a couple pages already, but so I had to stop it to work on this other book for Hellcat Press because the deadline was coming up.
Right. The pressures of an artist.
Yeah.
So the Ions Anthology, 600 years of one family going through a world of supernatural monsters and creatures, all tend to be drawn towards this family. Some family members are good.
Right.
Some are bad.
Right.
Some are evil. Some like to hunt the supernatural. Some don't. Some want to try to live a normal life. And you got how many writers are working on this right now?
So I brought on, I believe the final total was 26 writers, knowing the fact that people have lives and sometimes people, you know, story, some people are like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do it. So I brought on more than I need. The goal is to have anywhere between 15 to 20 stories in the first collected book. And by stories, I mean 4 to 8 page stories that take place somewhere within that time, that 600-year timeline from the 1500s all the way up to 2113 is the last one that's written. I've brought on writers, everything from, I got some people who've traditionally written novels or prose novels coming on to write scripts. I've got, you know, some seasoned people who've written comic books for the last decade or two. And I got a couple of people who are newer, or one guy who's never written a comic before, but his pitch to me was, he did a very good pitch. So I went ahead and brought him on. I was like, boy, if you can craft a script as good as your pitch is, and we're golden here.
Right. Right. You got halfway there. Now you just got to deliver on your promises.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And then
that sounds like a lot of work.
It is. I'm doing all the artwork for about 150 pages in this book, plus cover, plus promotional materials and stuff like that. So I.
And you have a company that's going to publish this already?
I do. So I've got a company, Phoenix Dream Publishing, who is going to be taking on the responsibilities of printing it and distributing it out for me once that goes past the Kickstarter stage.
Do they do worldwide?
Right now, they're only U.S. based, so they're looking to go worldwide. Hopefully soon. Right now, they're just based in the America.
And we are hopeful to have a launch party at a local comic book store, and then once we have that, we'll send that information out to everybody.
Yep. I plan
that we hopefully will be
listing
in multiple locations.
Yeah, the goal is to have a launch party here locally, and then to kind of do other release parties around in other comic shops that I can that are interested in doing that with me. I got the guys at the publishing company are also talking about having some stuff like that around other places besides just, you know, locally where I'm at. So I've got to get all that planned out. Right now, though, I'm just kind of focused on getting the stuff drawn because I gotta. The pages take a while because I'm doing all the work, you know, all the penciling, inking, and coloring myself.
Right. Well, why can't you just do? Are you thinking about getting a colorist on board?
No, I'm gonna do the coloring myself. I did hire a letterer because I wanted the lettering to be professional because lettering is a big thing, right?
If
lettering's wrong, the book looks wrong. So like, I got a girl coming on who's lettering it for me. She's does really good work. But as far as the coloring and the inking and the penciling, I'm doing all that myself, which is going to be time consuming. But I'll get the end result of the look that I want to get for each story.
That's awesome. I think it's interesting that you have all these writers from all over the globe, not just local writers out of the Northwest, but you got people from England and you have some other countries that I don't know all the countries. I don't want to start naming countries I don't know.
Oh, I got.
So, but I think it's interesting because you should get a world view that's going to be unique.
Right. Yeah. No, I've got England, Canada, Australia, Singapore, Nigeria. I got a guy in South America. So, I mean, it's all over the world, not only in just where they're located, but the kind of, you know, the ethnic backgrounds of these people, you know, I've got men, I've got women, straight people, gay people. It's going to be a very good, well-rounded as far as who's creating this book with me.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about it is you're going to have this eclectic collection of literature based around one family. And the nice thing is, though, is you're going to have something, like you were saying, you have people from all these different walks of life, so you're going to have all these different aspects, and it's not because of a political reason, it just worked out that way.
Exactly.
So it's a very natural progression, which is going to be nice. You're not making somebody black to be black. You
exactly.
know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Or, tell a story.
You know. Yeah, to tell a story. It's going to be nice. I think it's going to be cool. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I just need to get my ass drawing.
Do it. All right. Well, thanks. This is our first inaugural show here. So you're going to, you're going to edit this down at some point in the next week?
Yeah, I'll edit it down.
Or do you want me to?
Well, if you can, it'd be great. If not, I'll do it this weekend. But we should, before we go, though, we should talk about what our, quote unquote, this is like our episodes. Well, it's episode one, I guess. But what we're doing for in July for the next couple episodes.
Do we say 101 or we say number one?
Number one.
What? Yeah, because we're not doing seasons.
No,
right?
No, I don't want to do seasons.
What was the question? I'm sorry.
We should talk about what we're doing for the next couple episodes at the end of July, where we're going to be, what we're doing there.
Yeah, so, this is really cool. We got tickets to San Diego Comic-Con. We're going to drive down. We're going to pile into the old Legacy and drive our ass down from Seattle, Washington, down to San Diego, California.
Yep.
I think we have some friends that we're going to stay with, so we don't have to worry about our hotel.
That worked out nicely.
Yeah, well, it's lucky, because we would have been like 30 miles away at a Motel 6 otherwise.
Right.
And then we're going to try our hardest to this is kind of like a workcation for us, though, right?
Yeah.
We both have day jobs. We both have a job that pays our bills. We both have to maintain that job. So we're going to be working on that as well and be available and doing our conference calls. Luckily, we both work in a white collar situation, so it's, you know,
makes it easier.
You don't have to be in the office. Makes it a little easier. We're kind of lucky in that respect, but we're going to be doing that, and then we're going to try our hardest to put some content together based on our experiences down in San Diego Comic-Con. This is my first Comic-Con for San Diego.
It's my fourth.
I think this is Johnny's fourth.
My fourth, yeah.
Yeah, because you're a dick, but you know, because don't invite me. I get tickets. First person I call is, oh, I'll call Johnny because I know he'll love this.
To be fair,
he gets tickets and he's like, I'm going to take my wife.
No. To be fair, the last Comic-Con I went to in San Diego was before I even knew you. So that's 11 years ago.
Oh, so it's been some while. So we could say that your cherry has reformed.
Right. The hymen is back in place.
Well, because it's different now than it was.
Oh, it's so
huge.
Different.
It's huger
so
now
different.
Than it's ever been.
Yeah. Huger?
Yeah.
Did you say huger?
Huger.
All right, we'll take it.
I did, because that's a word.
Sure it is.
Yeah. It's funner.
It's more.
It's huger and funner.
All right, whatever.
It's more huge. Yeah. But, you know, the thing that's interesting is my dad almost took me to San Diego Comic-Con in, like, 1984.
Oh, damn.
And it was literally just...
In the hotel.
Yeah, it was... We didn't go. Something happened. I don't remember what happened. We didn't go for some reason. Because we were in Newport, California. And we were going to drive down. And I was like, oh, I want to go. And he was like, oh, we'll go. And then something happened and we didn't go. But it would have been just, you know... A freaking convention, normal convention
right.
center.
It'd been a hotel.
Tables and stuff. I wish I would have went because it would have been an interesting dichotomy, right?
It would have been.
To go then and then go now.
Because back then it was just like in a hotel lobby or the hotel, like a reception room.
It was.
Tables, you know, it's totally different.
Right. It was an actual comic convention.
It wasn't because San Diego Comic Con is not a Comic Con. It's a pop culture convention. It's like movies and TVs and video games and all
right.
this stuff. But
right.
yeah, so
right.
one thing.
The comics are completely overshadowed.
Right. One thing we should clarify is we're not. What we want to do as far as recording wise and publishing wise and what we actually do are probably going to be two different things. We would like to release some kind of content daily on the SoundCloud page, like a daily little, maybe like a half an hour podcast or something like that. What we'll probably have is we'll probably record enough material and post like one or two, you know, maybe one when we get there and one when we get back. Cause I think we might be a little too tired to actually edit these down each day, but we'll see. We promise to have something.
Yeah, we'll see.
We promise to post something while we're down there.
Yeah, we're pretty hardcore when it comes to all things geekery. So it'll be an interesting thing because, you know, you're gonna have to pull us away from the convention center,
right?
You know, and so it's gonna be fun.
Guys,
it's gonna be a lot
o'clock.
Of fun.
Go we're home.
Gonna, no. Yeah, yeah. Most of it. Yeah, most of it's gonna be. I'm not gonna. I don't think I'm gonna try to purchase anything so much.
Yeah, I'm just here for the.
As I just want. To look around, and I do want to see if we can find like a Batman number one or a Detective Comics number one, just to see it, You know
they'll
mean?
Be there.
Maybe, just to see it.
Maybe, well, I can guarantee you'll see a Batman one. Detective one, maybe not. There's a lot less of those. But you'll see.
Or a Detective 27.
You'll see that. You'll see all the big books there, I promise. They're there every year.
Right.
So.
Or a Marvel number one.
Yeah, you'll probably see a Marvel one, a Marvel Comics one, or a Captain America one there. Seeing a Detective one, or seeing anything before issue like 10 of Detective Comics is going to be hard because those are really scarce.
Well, you know, a lot of that is because a lot of those books were burned during the whole comics code.
For those ones is they were recycled for the war. That's what it was.
Oh yeah, for World War II. Yep.
They're recycled in the '40s of the war.
When you're right, you're right. That's the one thing when it comes to comic books. I make assumptions and most of the time there's a good chance I'm wrong, you know, because I don't remember everything. You're like, oh, that was issue blah blah blah, released on this date on this time, and
yeah,
you know,
I have on
page 7.
I'm not always right, but I have a crazy memory for shit like that for some reason. Well, I mean, it's because of my dad and growing up doing it with my dad all the time, you know, doing comics and buying.
Yeah, you guys were talking about it all the time, going over. Yeah, yeah, it's like when we went to when you brought those magic cards.
Oh yeah,
and Russ just went right through them.
Right,
and he pulled out what? He pulled out what? 2 cards or $100 a piece?
One card, $100 a piece, and a couple that were, you know, $10-$20 a piece.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah,
that was pretty cool. Did you sell those yet?
Oh yeah, I sold them all already.
Nice. And did you get with the value that he said?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't say that with confidence, man. Well, it makes me think that you didn't.
No, I did. I sold them all. So what I did is instead of like posting them on eBay, because I'm getting kind of irritated with eBay selling wise because there's so much bullshit there. Yeah. I sold off most of my Magic collection to a guy locally, and I used those cards and a couple of ones I had as like, oh, here's the big cards you'll make your money back on. Now take all the other shit that I have too.
Right. These to entice.
Yeah, these ones will help make your money back because you're going to resell them. Now take all this other shit that I don't want to, you know, as well. I mean, I probably could have made more money off it if I would have sold them all individually and done all the work myself, but honestly, I don't care anymore. I don't really want to be in the reselling business right now. I want to be in the I'm making a comic book and a podcast and being a creative person business right now.
Right. You want to make content. You don't want to be...
Exactly. I want to be a content creator.
Yeah. You're right. Right. Yeah. I'm excited. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun today.
So yeah, this is good. This is good. So we should probably eventually sign off so we can actually get this up somewhere.
Yeah, with that, let's go ahead and sign off. We'll try to do this again... Within the next week?
Yeah.
Maybe. Before we go, try to do one more before we take off down to California?
We'll do a pre-trip show.
Does Sundays work well for you?
Sundays work pretty well, yeah. I'm usually not busy on Sundays.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool to get to a point where we're doing it almost every day, but that'll be if we're making money off of it.
Yeah, we have to have money for that.
Hint. hint. Yeah. All right. Go ahead and we'll call it good. Yep.
Thanks for listening, whoever listened. All 3 of you.
Yeah. One of
thanks,
you.
Mom.
Thanks, Mom.
Your mom's not going to listen.
I don't want her to. We swear too much.
My mom can listen all she wants. Your mom's not going to want to listen to this. All right. And with that, we are done. Bye-bye.
We're out. Bye-bye.